Well, hello. It's the Bob McCown podcast for this Wednesday. Yours truly.
Featuring?
It's not featuring anybody.
You said featuring last week.
We have an esteemed guest. Well, I made a mistake. It happens.
Thanks.
John Shannon is here, as I can't do anything about it. He just shows up, whether I ask him or not. And we're thrilled to be joined by our friend, a longtime colleague, the former voice of news in this country on CBC. Peter Mansbridge is with us. You look beautiful. Are you in Stratford?
I am in Stratford, and it's good to be with both you and John today, Bob. It's great to talk to you.
Well, let's get to this issue of this of the social injustice battle that is ongoing in the United States specifically, although it is all over the world. Really, we are focused on America, and especially because of the incidents of the last week, the decision by basketball, baseball, and ultimately hockey players to protest by having games postponed. In a general sense, how do you feel about this movement?
Hey, I'm all for it. More power to them. We're witnessing a bizarre year, right? 2020.
Of course.
So many things we would never have wished for. But this moment that kind of started with the George Floyd situation is incredibly powerful. It's incredibly emotional. It has divided parts of the country, as the United States, as we've witnessed, and to some degree parts of Canada as well. You know, there is a kind of bounce back on this one at times. But the way I look at it is, if there's ever going to be change, this is where it's going to come. There's an irony in this. You know, post George Floyd, it went on for the protests and the marches, went on for a long time, and it was up top of the newscast for a long time. The irony is, it was starting to disappear. And what brought it back? What brought it back was another incident. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the Jacob Blake situation. In other words, what police did in Kenosha brought it back to the forefront, and brought it back to the point where athletes, especially basketball athletes, men and women, have turned this into a situation where something has to change. And I have so much respect, especially for the basketball players. We're going to talk about the other sports in a moment, but when you consider how basketball has led on two of the great issues that confront us as a society right now, COVID-19, was Adam Silver, you know, when he pulled the plug on the NBA season,
he started it.
Everything else followed, you know, from others, not just other sports, but governments. Mm-hmm. They all followed within days, if not hours. And here, once again, basketball leads the way. It's still unclear. The stories are still being told about how this unfolded last week, which teams, you know, were responsible for it happening. It's clear some of the Raptor players were in fall, but the Lakers and the Clippers were clearly very much the forefront. But this is, you know, this is a powerful moment we are in. And just how powerful it will turn out to be will hinge on what happens, what changes, what real changes take place as a result of all this.
Actually, you bring up an interesting point, Peter, because the basketball players have used their platform to talk about social injustice. The question for a lot of people is, if they don't play, do they still have that same platform? And so where do you draw that line of, okay, we're going to play, but we better speak out, versus, well, we're not going to play, and then who's going to hear us?
Well, I think they showed the power they have by shutting it down for a couple of days and having all, you know, other sports join in with them. Look, there's something about the basketball psyche. And, you know, Bob, you may understand it better than me, because I'm kind of a recent convert to basketball. But when you go back 25 years, to the Rodney King riots. Right. It's more than 25 years now, to the early 90s in LA. What did basketball do then? They spoke up against it, the Lakers being one of the key teams. They spoke out against it, but did they shut things down? Did they stop playing? No.
No.
They moved cities to play somewhere else so they wouldn't be involved. This is a fundamental difference here, right? They shut it down. They've said really strong things. They've been supported for the most part by their owners. They're wearing, you know, the what they wear on their uniforms. You can't get away from seeing the issue, no matter how much you're watching the game. But it's, you know, I keep coming back to this point. It still comes down to what happens now. What real difference will it make? Or will we be sitting a year from now, 10 years from now, 25 years from now, saying, well, you know, that was a moment. We all remember it because we covered it, but sure, nothing changed. Now, the you know, they started by doing the, you know, votes, using the arenas for voting. Good for them. Right. Yeah, that's a critical issue.
Great idea. Yeah.
Yeah, great idea. But there's obviously got to be more than that. You know, I watched that hockey players news conference the other day, and I was proud of them. I was really, you know, like a lot of people, not all, but a lot of people were upset the day before when they played. But they got their act together, and they stood there united behind some of the key players of color who are still in the playoffs. And one of them said, can't remember which one, but one of them said, we've got to get into the community. And he's right. They absolutely, they can do that. They have the power to do that. They have the prestige to do that. They can go, the example I use is they can go to schools. I mean, hockey players in this country are still heroes. You know, they're kids from coast to coast to coast look up to them. And if they, some of the major ones, and as many as possible, go into the school system and talk to kids about what this issue is about, it'll have tremendous impact. If they do nothing, nothing will change. And we'll look back at this and say, well, you know, hockey players, they kind of were guilted into what happened and they did it. And, you know, and then they were back playing hockey and we never heard from them again on this issue. I'm hoping that won't be the case. And with some of the players that we've seen who are leading the diversity movement within hockey, I don't think they'll let it go. I really don't think they will.
We're with Peter Mansbridge.
I'll tell you, guys, I have a level of uncomfortableness in discussing this topic. I feel like we need to. I think it's important. Well, we all think it's important. And yet here we are, three white guys of a certain age.
Old white guys.
All right. Yeah. So three old white guys talking about something that, granted, we have lived through. I mean, we are old enough to remember Selma. We are old enough to remember Dr. Martin Luther King and his assassination and what he went through before that. And we are old enough to remember you know, what President Johnson...
Well, Ali, Bob. We were
Muhammad Ali. On and on and on. We have context through the course of our lives. I mean, I grew up in Toronto principally, but I'm originally from Columbus, Ohio, and I would go back with my grandmother to Columbus, and I got on a bus with her at one point, and while she was paying, putting the money in the you know, the thing at the where the driver is, I walked to the back of the bus. And she was horrified and called me to come back to the front of the bus and said, you know, Bobby, we don't sit at the back of the bus. And she used the epithet that was common at the time, saying they sit at the back of the bus. So I had no understanding of that. So we've lived through this kind of stuff, and yet, are we qualified? Should we be the voices or among the voices to elaborate on this? Peter, do you ever feel uncomfortable talking about this as if it's really not, it's not something we can really relate to?
No, and you know, we can't relate to it, but we can help others understand what it's like by talking to the right people. And you know, when I got up this morning, I was uncomfortable with the fact that you know, us three white old guys were going to talk on a number of levels about this issue. But you know, I know you've talked to lots of other people of different backgrounds and different cultures and races on this issue as well. But look, we can never relate to the, I can never relate to the fact that when I go out on the street or I drive my car downtown, that I have to worry, that it ever crosses my mind that, oh my gosh, I could get stopped and could be in a real terrible situation here. You know, I always carry my driver's license and all that stuff with me, and that's all I think of that could possibly happen.
Yeah.
I don't worry about my, you know, my son or my daughter's going out in the evening. I don't worry. I don't have to spend time sitting there talking to my grandkids about the way they should act if they ever get stopped by a police officer. But that is the daily routine for people of color. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I've heard it from, you know, those who are friends of mine who are people of color, or those who I talk to through business. You hear it all the time. So can we relate? Well, we can't relate to that, but we can do our best to ensure that others understand that issue. But you know, part of this process of trying to ensure that Black Lives Matter is all of us doing whatever we can to put forward the situation as it is and suggest alternatives to make things better. We can't be sort of out of the conversation. And those athletes don't want us out of the conversation. Look at the Black athletes in hockey. They're desperate to have their white colleagues in the conversation.
Sure.
They would lead the conversation in some cases. They have to have them. And reluctantly, in some cases, there they were last week. And if that made a difference, great. Would I feel better if, you know, the fourth box in this Zoom and the fifth and the sixth were people of color? Sure, I'd feel better. But
the interesting thing about it for me, Peter, is Bob and I have talked about on the show with Paul Jones, with Kevin Weeks, with Butch Carter, is that I think this, in some simplistic way, is more of a white issue than it is a Black issue, because we're the majority. We have to change our thinking. And just as an example, for instance, with the 2 days that the National Hockey League players closed their league down, the Dallas Stars lost corporate dollars and season ticket holders over it. And you're going, seriously? In this day and age, people are going to, because they don't agree with what the players stood for, they're going to pull their money. So we still have a ton of education for the majority to do in order to try to help it. And to me, that's a big part of this. Another point, and you talked about it, of going forward. For me, the interesting part, particularly for the players in the United States who play and live in the United States, is their season now will be over by the 1st of October. NBA, NHL, Major League Baseball close. And the election's November the 3rd. They have 30 days to help. 30 days to make a difference, to campaign in a way that maybe just there will be some social change at the ballot box in early November.
That's possible. I think you got to be careful on assuming in which direction many of those athletes are going to vote.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's pretty clear how many of the leading Black athletes are going to vote. It's not so clear on how some of the white athletes are going to vote. And in some sports, you know, they're pro-Republican. They're pro-Trump. Bob, you see it in golf, see it at the NFL level, some of the white athletes.
Well, you're right. You're 100% right. You know, I mean, look, the reality is this, guys. I mean, this change that we are all proponents of is not one that's going to happen in the next 30 days and is not going to even happen in the next 30 years. It's going to be a very, very slow, hopefully methodical march to get to the point where we don't have to have this conversation. And muddled in the middle of this, guys, I was watching a video at 6:30 this morning. I don't know where I got it, Facebook, YouTube, wherever. And it was a rapper, obviously black, I believe congressman, black, Denzel Washington, the actor, and another actor who I should remember the name of, but I can't. And their position in this was that this is not a white problem. It's actually a black problem. And they pointed to crime of blacks on blacks. 80% of all crimes committed are African-Americans on African-Americans. They talked about the demise of the family situation, too many absentee parents, fathers. Now, I don't know what to believe or what not to believe, but it makes it even more difficult to try and move forward. And above and beyond that, if you're a Republican and you support Trump and you have grown up with a position of discrimination, racial discrimination, is this movement going to convince you? Is a bunch of basketball players not playing going to change your mind? Is a conversation like the three of us are trying to have going to change your mind? I don't have any sense that that's going to happen. And yet, you can't do nothing. What's the answer, guys? I mean, I don't know that any of us have it. Do we?
Let me tackle that one a little bit.
Please. Because,
you know, we've witnessed, we're all old enough to know the last 50 to 60 years of this issue, where, you know, there have been some signs of progress, but the bottom line is still the same. So we've seen a lot of other people try to do something here, and they failed. Usually politicians, for lots of different reasons, but mainly their desire to be reelected. Here we're witnessing a new player on the stage, right? In terms of athletes. And I see it as a fundamental change and a really significant moment. And while parts of me tend to agree with you, Bob, that, you know, it could be 30 years before there's any change, I'm hoping that, and it's more than hope, I actually think there's a chance that there will be change. That there's what we've witnessed this summer, especially in terms of the ages of the people who have been in the street, young people who are demanding change. We haven't seen that kind of resistance since the late 60s on the war.
Mm-hmm.
We're seeing young people across the U.S. coupled with those in Canada and in Europe. I don't recall anything quite like this. And here the athletes are saying, you know, this is important. We can change. You can throw all those figures that are quoted, as you quite rightly say, about, you know, black on black violence, troubles within the black community, et cetera, but why is that happening? It's happening for some fundamental reasons about the inequities in our society. So if we can get at those inequities, which starts with a basic understanding, you know, it starts with people like us. We can sit here and, you know, and talk the high talk, but how honest are we with ourselves about how we've looked at this issue ourselves over, you know, our personal histories? How honest are we about our own biases? And so we have to confront those honestly and then move forward in talking to others and encouraging others to be a part of the conversation.
But let me throw something else here. John, let me throw something, because I want to throw something at you too.
Okay.
So last week, when all the cancellations started, Now, John, I know you're very active on Twitter. Peter, are you? Do you pay any attention?
Pete's on there once in a while.
I'm on there once in a while. I you know, there's so much garbage in that sewer that
I know. And that's what I want to speak.
But also the occasional really good point.
Mm-hmm. I get it. So
thank you, Peter. I appreciate that.
Here's well, you don't know which he was referring to.
Oh, I know Peter follows me. I know. Come on, it's okay.
All right. So here's my question. I don't get overly political on Twitter last week, but I talk briefly about what is happening. I am stunned by the number of people who say, I don't care about this issue. When is basketball coming back? When is baseball coming back? When is hockey coming back? You're nodding your head, Shannon. I assume you got a lot of it too. I don't know whether you did, Pete. Did you?
Not so much, but I know that it's out there, right? And what I don't choose to read a lot of the comments that come in on my the occasional tweets. I read the ones of people I know because they pop up in a different segment. But I don't read a lot. I certainly don't read anything that comes from somebody who doesn't have the courage to put their own name on it.
Correct.
I don't even bother going into it. Listen, I know that feeling is out there. People are entitled to have that feeling. It's just not a feeling I share. I think this is a great opportunity, and I'm proud of those who've forced people like us to have these kind of conversations and to do more than just, you know, converse about it and do our podcast about it, but to actually get involved in doing something about it. If that happens, then it's a good thing.
Yeah. Well, first of all, you know, for every time you type, 280 characters, you better be prepared for backlash. That's the bottom line. Even if you say the most wholesome, straightforward thing, there's going to be some jerk out there that thinks you're on your high tower, and you've really got to watch it, and you got to be prepared for it from a social media perspective. I want to change the topic a little bit, Peter, in that, say, in the business that you were in for a long time, still in the business in a different way, but our phones have changed our world so much, you know, and the fact that, you know, we are commenting more about the Jacob Blake situation because of the video we saw.
That's right.
In the world that we lived in when you started it, dare I say that it was on film and it needed to be 2 days to be developed or quickly developed and videotape and then digital. You know, that's how the world has changed. And I would hope that from the race issue could change as quickly. I'm not optimistic, but you have to be hopeful.
Well, you know, I can't remember who said it now, and I should remember it, but somebody said in the last month or so, you know, racism isn't new. Racism hasn't changed. What's changed is the filming of racism. We see it.
Yeah.
I mean, if Jacob Blake, if that had happened without, you know, three or four different angles of people holding their phones, we wouldn't be in this situation. We wouldn't be talking about it the way we, you know, there'd be claims and counterclaims and it would suddenly sort of drop off the map. But because it was filmed, because George Floyd was filmed, because so many of these different issues, incidents have been on tape and you see them and they last forever in that fashion, it is different. It's totally different. You're right. When I started, it was, you know, black and white film and you have to wait for it to come out of the lab. It was, you know, it was crazy. And then everything changed relatively quickly. And this is the point about change. It, you know, change can and will happen. Will it happen on this issue? I don't know. But I always think back to, it was around 1988. And John, you remember where, when we were all in the old Jarvis Street building. Mm-hmm. And I was down on the main floor, sitting with Barbara Frum, the host of the Journal. And we were sitting there talking about Nelson Mandela. And he was in prison for the rest of his life. He was going to be in prison. Apartheid was at its, you know, at its most awful level. And it was going to be there forever. And we sat there talking about this, and I said to Barbara, I said, well, you know, things will change. Things have to change. And she looked at me and she said, it'll never change. It'll never change in South Africa. It is, you know, the law of the land. He's going to be in jail forever. They think he's a communist, a terrorist, the whole bit. It'll never change. I always think about that, because then 3 years later, she was sitting in Nelson Mandela's backyard interviewing him the day he came out.
Wow.
And change can happen in most unlikely of circumstances. I mean, Northern Ireland, look at what happened there. We grew up, our whole childhoods, our teenage years, our college years, our early working years were of the awful situation in Northern Ireland, and with the belief that it would never change. It changed. This can change. This can change if the people somehow involve themselves to the level where minds change. If they wait for Washington to change, it'll never happen. But they can change things. And let's see whether it happens this time.
Before we let you go, we are, as we mentioned, all of a certain age and in a certain position in our lives.
You're old, Bob. You're old.
Thank you. And our reasons for being on, I mean, this is what we have right now. This is what you do, a podcast, you know, we do this, but we do not have the platform we once had, that daily or nightly platform, to, in some way, small or large, give our opinions, hopefully shape the conversation in some way. Over the last while, through COVID and now through this, the escalation of the Black Lives Matter movement, do you miss that opportunity every night to talk to this country?
Sometimes I miss it a bit, but nowhere near as much as I thought I might miss it. You know, there's a need for change in a lot of things. And you know, those who've had the roles that I've had, you've had, and John's had, those change over time. And we're still involve ourselves in the conversation, you know, as best we can. But you know, the media landscape has changed so much. Being the anchor of the network news is not what it used to be.
Of course not.
You know, I always put it, you know, I tend to put it in the American perspective, because it's easier to make it sound this way instead of using Canadian personalities. But let's say, you know, forget about the Cronkite years. Go to the next level, when it was Brokaw and Jennings and Rather. You could go out on the street in New York or Los Angeles or, you know, Wichita, Kansas, and say, who are the three anchors of the network news? And people will say, well, of course, you know, it's Tom Brokaw and Peter Jennings and Dan Rather. Everybody knew that. Mm-hmm. You try that today?
No
you'd
chance.
You'd be lucky to get one of the three names right.
Yep.
Because there's so much more than three. And people's
Lester Holt, Nora O'Donnell, and David Muir.
Okay, give that man a ice cream cone. That's very good.
Oh, yeah. Hey,
there's one thing that hasn't changed, Peter, and that is your beloved Toronto Maple Leafs. So we have to get your thought on your beloved Toronto Maple Leafs before.
Well, they're not even playing Shannon, for God's sakes, which is not an unusual thing.
Which is
since 1967, for God's sake.
I didn't realize you changed your name to Peter, Bob.
Well, let me answer the question this way. You know, like a lot of other Leaf fans, I was very disappointed by the way things unfolded, and although I will forever remember that game four in the last 3 minutes. That was the most excitement around a Leaf game I've seen in decades, and that was a treasure. So at least they gave us that. But I was disappointed, and I firmly believed, and I think Kyle Dubas is starting to show the indications of this as well, that there are going to be a lot of people, a lot of players who were wearing blue and white in this year who won't be back next year. And I think that's needed. I think there needs to be some change. You know, to me, there's only one person who's not tradable, but, and that's Austin, but that's just me. However, let me make this point about the Leafs, and it's got nothing to do with the Leafs. You know, I watched the game the other night between the Islanders and
Philadelphia.
Philadelphia, right. And I watched those two teams playing, and I thought, there's no way the Leafs could be on this ice. They're just not that good. They're nowhere near as good as either one of those two teams. And if they're ever going to make it, they got to get as good as those two. And those two may not even make it to the finals. So, you know, there's change needs to happen in Toronto. I'm not saying throw everything out, but there's clearly got to be some change. And, you know, we know where the problems are. They've been the same problems we've had for years. Team's not big enough. Team doesn't have defense. And there's something. I don't blame as much on. I get mad at Freddie Anderson when he lets the big goal in the big game, but guy's got no defense. Give him a break.
You know, I love getting Mansford going on this. I love getting them going on this stuff.
Well, I hate to tell you, Lugnuts, the truth, but this is the same conversation that the three of us probably would have had 52 years ago and every year since at this time of year. So this is not a great revelation. I hate to tell you, Mansbridge. They have disappointed us almost annually for 53 consecutive years, and there's no reason to believe that that's going to change anytime soon. Having said that, there's always hope. And, you're sticking to it, I gather, as a Leaf fan.
There's always hope, and there's the Raptors, and they're the Blue Jays. Can you believe the Blue Jays this year?
Isn't it interesting that as we sit here right now, you can be optimistic about the Raptors still, but you can really be optimistic about the Blue Jays, and I'd have bet a million. I don't know about you. I'd have bet $1 million against that happening, wouldn't you?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And I probably would have bet $1 million that the Raptors would, you know, without Kawhi, would not have had the year that
I agree. I agree.
And I remind you of you know, the last season when they were down 2-0 in the round two, and they won it all. So,
a simple answer on the Jays: playing outside. Playing outside helps, you know.
You've lost your mind. What are you talking about? Well, playing outside.
Playing with real grass and under the lights and sunshine. Come on, that's baseball.
They play 65 games a year outside under any circumstance,
but not at home.
John Shannon from the Buffalo Chamber of Commerce. Thanks, John. Good to be with James.
Thank you, Mansbridge. Thank you. Look, the setting looks beautiful. I haven't been to Stratford in several years, but I love the place, and especially love the place at this time of year. Yep. 4 months from now, when you and your bride are sitting there and the snow is up to here, I'll think about you again and question the wisdom of your decision to move there. But nonetheless, in the summer, there's no place better. Listen, it's lovely to see you. We thank you as always. You've always been generous with your time, and we want you to know we sincerely appreciate it. And hopefully we'll run into you sometime soon.
That's great to talk to you, Bob. Even to talk to John. It's great.
Oh, boy, get on. Another guy on the bandwagon. Appreciate thank it.
You. There you go. That's Peter Mansbridge on the podcast. We'll see you on Friday. Bye-bye now.